You're listening to NoAgendaStream.com. All talk, no commercials, no agenda.
Come on over here.
Come on, coward.
Coward! I know that I want to punch you in the nose. I'll beat your goddamn ass, you son of a bitch. You're an intellectual dumbass.
And I'm coming. You coward. You think you're a tough guy. I hate you, coward.
We're going to defeat this anti-human scum. We're going to wreck their world.
Hello, everyone. This is the No Agenda Stream, and I am Jesus.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. The clock has started.
Five, four, three,
Liftoff.
We have a liftoff. It's good to be back. Hello, everyone. This is the Void Zero. My name is Mark van Dijk. I am your host. And we did a few changes yesterday. I added my green screen again, repositioned my camera. Wasn't sure if today it was going to become a Mark and George show or just me, but it's gonna be just me. About an hour or so, we'll see. We'll see where we get today. How about that? Nick the Rat, thank you for some help with OBS. Very happy with that. In fact, if you're watching, you can also use the dlive.tv/voidzero chat. And I'm also on Twitch. You can also use that. And if I click this button, you should even be able to see this as an overlay on my screen. My family left for a short weekend holiday. Wife and kid, my sister-in-law, went to a Dutch, kind of an island. Not really an island, maybe an island, I don't know. It's called Schiermonnikoog. Practice that. Schiermonnikoog. It is one of the five islands you can see if you look at a map and you see the Netherlands and you see these five small islands just above the mainland. And one of those is where my sweethearts are at right now. And for me, it's been a while. It's been a while since I made a show like this. And it's been a while since I actually felt like doing a show. Honestly, you know, I'm one of those people. I have very high ups sometimes, but I can also have very low lows. And I guess it's a little bit like, you know, maybe a snake shedding its skin, or maybe how about a phoenix? I like that one. A phoenix. You know, it burns up into ashes, and then from those ashes arise a new phoenix. Could that be me? I like to think so. It certainly sounds nice. Hey guys, in the No Agenda chat room, noagendastream.com. Happy to see you all there. And this guy is optimistic again, because there have been a few things happening in the big wide world, which made me optimistic, I have to say. This guy Zach Voorhees, don't know if you heard it. He was on the Alex Jones show today, actually, so I recommend watching that again. Watch the replay or download it. He was there with another guy, also I think a former Google employee. And I was watching it kind of, you know, from the corner of my eye, because I was also working on my computer, updating it, fixing it, whatever. And these two guys, well, we may call them heroes, I think, because that's what they are. They exposed Google. And especially the way that ever since Trump got elected, Google decided to become evil. So what they did was they collected files and they exposed those files out in the open so that everyone can see that Google is not only censoring speech, no, they're actually going further. They're purging speech. Not just pushing it down, just exterminating it from their, well, what used to be a search engine. I guess it's more like a hide engine. Is that a name? Is that a thing? A hide engine, you know? It's Google for you. Not the company it once was. So, two courageous guys, well, originally one, but now another one came out and said, well, this is just going too far. I'm not sure that I appreciate what's going on here anymore. In fact, I don't even feel safe working for this company anymore. And this company is becoming a threat to public discourse because they are now determining wrong think and right think. And they said, like, the engineers who are working for Google, there are two classes, basically. One of the classes, you know, one of the types of people is just very much brainwashed, is really thinking, what we are doing is right. We need to censor dangerous opinions. Dangerous. 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 And the other class says, hey man, what the heck are we doing here? I don't feel like this is the company where I started out. And, you know, we have to remember, these guys are putting their own lives at stake, their salaries, because they didn't, you know, earn like a low income. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Zach Voorhees, he earned more than $200,000 a year. And he said it all goodbye for the common good. And this is on top of the other stuff that already came out with regards to Jeffrey Epstein. Remember? The Israeli intelligence service connected central, I guess, spider in a web of pedophile, sex trafficking, extortion, blackmail, you name it. Yesterday, I also saw a picture of Ghislaine, let's call her Ghislaine Maxwell, daughter of the late Robert Maxwell, Mossad agent, and other interesting connections, basically a sales guy for the Promise software. Thank you, No Agenda. You exposed them very well. You really brought some new information to light. Adam Curry. Well done. Well done. I'm going to listen to it again because that, you know, it was so chock full of information last No Agenda show that I'm not able to retain that all in one go. So I just have to listen to it again. But well done. This all is making me very positive. Maybe it's not just me who is feeling a little bit like a phoenix. From the ashes comes something new, something optimistic. Maybe this is the same for our society. We see it with information coming to light. We see it with, previously hidden nefarious activities. They're not able to suppress these anymore. It's not just Epstein. It's not just Google. It's the royal family in the UK, specifically Prince Andrew, who is, according to Leo Zagami, who was also on the Alex Jones show tonight, relying a little bit heavily on that show because that was just the last thing I watched. So, you know, that's still fresh in the mind. Prince Andrew has fled, has gone into hiding. Now, there was someone else who went into hiding but was photographed by the New York Post, Ghislaine Maxwell herself. apparently she was reading a book about the life and death of CIA agents. And the thought that came to mind for me was, this, you know, this seems like a not really well hidden threat to the CIA, because the death of CIA agents, and we know that the Mossad and the CIA are close. We know that Ghislaine Maxwell, via her father, is connected to the Mossad. We also know that Jeffrey Epstein is a Jew. So, you know, I mean, these are just things we have to be able to talk about, these things. We're always able to discuss whatever, you know, secret stuff the NSA is doing, or whatever secret stuff the CIA is doing. But as soon as you say Israel, or I feel it, you know, I feel it myself. As soon as you say Israel or Mossad, it starts to become a little bit scary, I guess. But I'm sure, and this is just instinctively, there are both good and, you know, bad actors in the Mossad, just like there are good and bad actors in every intelligence agency. And I guess for an intelligence agency to function, you need both, you know, good cop, bad cop, that kind of dynamic. But it's very important to have checks and balances. And it seems like this is the thing, well, you know, and not just this year, we know it, we've been talking about it for a long time. I mean, No Agenda's been talking about it for a long time. I've been talking about that same thing for a long time, maybe not as publicly, but before I worked for No Agenda, I was doing similar things, also trying to give others a voice, because I realized that's mainly what I'm doing is, you know, I build platforms so that other people have the ability to say what they want. This is just a bonus now, me talking about what I actually want to talk about. But more than anything, I get energy from enabling systems for people. I like to give people the ability to speak their minds, especially if what they have to say is coming more from their own, you know, their own thought process, instead of the just parroting the accepted narrative. And this the main reason that I am I get so much energy from that is because of what happened on the 11th of September 2001. I remember where I was. I was in a coffee shop, a Dutch coffee shop. I wasn't even legally allowed to smoke, but you know, you try it out because you're a youngster. So I went in, and they didn't ask me for my ID, so I stayed. And then the news hit the television. And I hate to say it, but I'm not gonna shield you guys and myself from the truth. There were a lot of Muslims in that coffee shop who said, "This is a good thing. America deserves it." And then, in the same hour, they started saying that the attack was done by Muslims. And this really got me thinking. You know, maybe this is a little bit soon, because they immediately said it. There was no investigation. But even more than that, I thought it was plausible because of the reaction I saw from people who were in that coffee shop. But this woke me up, and I thought, well, we need to talk about this. But then what I noticed was, instead of talking about it, both the US and Europe, or my country back then, just didn't really discuss what happened. They were talking about one specific story. They didn't make us think. No, they told us what to believe. And that was what woke me up. And ever since then, I thought, well, the one thing we have to preserve is our own ability to think rationally, to sort things out, to think about multiple angles. And we need to, most importantly, we need to be guided by our own sense of righteousness. And I think, in a way, I realized that what happened then was a step towards becoming, how should I say it? Becoming enlightened. enlightened. I guess that's the thing. If you want to become enlightened, you need to see both good things and bad things, and you need to decide for yourself, which way do I want to gravitate towards and which way do I want to move away from? It's like, it's never nice or even okay to see a person like kicking a dog, for example. But because that situation happens, because you see it, because you're confronted with it, you pretty much automatically decide if that's something you enjoy or if that is something you move away from. And most people move away from that. Why? Because they don't see love in that situation, and they see what is an image of innocence, a dog, you know, no match for human, being treated unfairly. So we use that as a symbol to decide where we are gravitating towards. If we are gravitating towards, well, hey, that seems fun, I also want to give that dog a kick. I want to wield my power, my superior power over this helpless creature. Or if you're gravitating towards righteousness. And righteousness is where I gravitate towards. And that gives me some kind of an inner strength. You know, you instinctively know what is righteous, and you are also able to reconsider situations based on new information and also reconsider your own position in such a situation. For example, if that dog turns out to have been kicked because it was almost going to attack a child, and suddenly the situation changes, but your sense of righteousness does not change. It is just the new information, helping you reinforce your own direction in life. And I guess also the direction of our soul. I believe that people have souls. I'm just not sure if the soul is inside of the body or if the body is inside of a soul. Because I kind of think that the body being inside of a soul is also plausible, I guess. I mean, if we all live in God's reality, then what are we living in if not in like a shared soul? Anyway, this is getting too esoteric. I didn't mean to go that way, but what I am seeing right now is that through the exposure of many many dark things coming to light, this helps us gravitate towards righteousness. We see people standing up against big tech corporations, Google, one of the biggest tech corporations. We see people standing up against big, like Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, I have trouble even defining such a guy, but he was, enforcing his power onto others. And there were people stronger than that because they said, I am going to break free from this. I am going to seek publicity. I am going to shed light on this story, on my story. And I want people to learn about this story because I want these things to stop. And that is what we're seeing right now. And that is what is making me very optimistic about the future we are heading towards. And sometimes I realize that the internet, you know, just the simple fact that we got the internet, an information exchange network, which it is at its core, is such an important, maybe this is the most important thing since the coming of Jesus. The centralization of many different religions, and no longer those being available to one certain tribe or one certain race or only the initiated. No, because Christianity came to the planet, suddenly something that was before that esoteric and fractured and scattered across the planet became more centralized as Christianity grew. I'm not saying that there weren't bad things happening. I mean, this is still planet Earth. Hello, of course, bad things happen. But the most important thing to realize is that the biggest change, I mean, this is why I don't really agree with people who say, well, Christianity is just a collection of paganism and symbols that they have stolen and you know, adjusted to their own narrative, and religion is only a form of imposing external control on other people. Because I think, more than anything, religion is not just from the outside projected onto the people, but it's also people who want to get a certain, you know, set of guidelines, a set of rules, a set of tools, rituals to live by, because they want to live in a common way. And thanks to Christianity, this became more commonplace. And, you know, skip ahead, I mean, like 2,000 years or something. I mean, these things, they don't go quickly. But, you know, move ahead 2,000 years, and what did we receive? We received the next thing. Information no longer just being scattered. I mean, in the beginning, sure, but information becoming more available to anyone, regardless of who you are, where you came from, or what your social status is, what your religious status is. This is the internet, and it's, so far, I think still it is a very, very primitive tool, like religion in the beginning was also a primitive tool that we learned to wield, that some people used to impose their own control on others, but that most people used as a tool to enrich their lives and their perspectives, and that we all used to come closer together. So, in a sense, I mean, is it almost possible to call this a gift from God, you know? And is it that far-fetched to call the internet a gift from God, because we all received it? And is the way we are using this tool, namely to expose what is bad and to, you know, gravitate towards what is good, isn't that like the same thing as what we had with religion? And isn't that the same thing that we keep doing over and over again? We keep trying to make an emotional, a spiritual, a rational connection with each other. So I was driving here, and I realized that both my own situation in the last couple of weeks, where I wasn't feeling so great, but then I started feeling better again, and I started, you know, incorporating, I guess, new insights and new lessons in my own life into a healthy framework, instead of just being down about the current situation of the world and all of that. And the way that we see this on a grand scale, like, you know, the exposure of bad things, we slowly incorporate those into our own lives, and we start to use those for the better. I mean, Google, man, that exposure of Google, and before that, the exposure thanks to Snowden, and before that, WikiLeaks, you know, those are all things that are not given to just anyone, but they are shared with everyone. Unfortunately, in my opinion, maybe Ed Snowden could have chosen somebody a little bit more trustworthy, because now a large amount of data just didn't receive it. Maybe that wasn't even needed. I don't know. Maybe it could have helped. But this is making me optimistic, because that means that the darkness is always temporary and the light is always something that will prevail over all of us, over everyone. So that is what Minister Mark was thinking about. And this is part of a change I'm going through personally. I grew up on a Protestant school. I didn't have a religion from my house, you know, from my family, or just my mom. She wasn't religious. I always enjoyed the symbolicism of what I learned at the Protestant school. But after the elementary school, not much more attention on religion was spent. Not much new things happened. But now that I have my own family, and now that I am seeing how many people are, well, here's a nice one, nice analogy. How many people are worshiping the golden calf? Back then, we weren't able to, change those people's minds. They were worshiping the golden calf. Well, it's the same right now with people worshiping all kinds of things that essentially weren't hardly forbidden. You know, it was it wasn't forbidden as in you shouldn't do this or else, but it was just, it was discouraged, strongly discouraged by those who had the eyes to see and the ears to hear. But, you know, everyone decides for themselves if they want to worship the golden calf. And it's the same these days in the present with, you know, people just straying off the yellow brick road. Is that a nice analogy? I guess that's fine. I mean, everyone is allowed to stray. We're all sinners. Anyway, now that I realize that, I am also a little bit more interested in religion again. So the plan is to visit an Orthodox church in my city and to visit a Roman Catholic church. And I'm just going to see how those things land with me, how I feel about being there. This is also in the same frame of mind, you know, of systems existing of both positive and negative things, because I told this to some people and they said, well, you know, but the Catholic, Roman Catholic Church and child molestation, this and that. And I was like, yeah, that's true. But if we if we're being realistic, then we can conclude that the elite everywhere is seems to be mostly guided by what we call satanic influences, pedophilia in the highest in the upper crust of, you know, world dominance. I mean, those people, man, they decide everything. They try to decide everything. They try to decide the media. Now they try to decide what is what we can see on the internet. They try to control all the aspects of our lives, and yet people break free from that. So should I be discouraged because we also see those things in the church? I guess not, because I have a strong belief that good will prevail, that the light will prevail, that those who are dabbling in the dark have a chance to come back to the light, and those who have chosen to stay in darkness will, you know, cannot be convinced to stray off that path. It is the yin yang symbol. It is the black, the darkness containing a bit of light, and all light containing a little bit of darkness. There's always a choice. There's always a way of straying. There's always, a unique path to take, or you can do nothing. And I have noticed in my own life that if you do nothing and if you just, you know, are inactive, things start to deteriorate. It's like having a garden. If you don't take care of your garden, then, you know, things keep growing, and before you know it, doesn't look as nice anymore. Now, I'm not a garden. I'm not a guy who enjoys to work in his garden. I mean, if it's up to me, I'm gonna hire someone to do that for me. But in life, that is not viable. You have to do things yourself. So, the most important thing, the most important lesson in life, is to realize that you can take things easy. You don't have to choose right away, and it's somewhat of a consoling idea that we are all sinners, because that means that it's okay to sin if we repent, which are all, you know, Christian terms that most people, or at least in this country, and maybe in the larger Europe and maybe everywhere, people shun away from. I guess if I look at myself in the past, I kind of ran away from those expressions. And I'm now in a position in life, in a phase in life where I've started to wonder, why am I running away from those things, like, you know, the wrong path, or sinning and repenting and stuff like that. And I don't really have an answer for why I ran away, but maybe the answer is I ran away so that I can consciously rediscover it. You know, it's like driving. It's like learning how to drive. At first, you are aware of not being, you know, conscious about anything in the car. They tell you to look in a mirror, but you look at the mirror. You don't look through the mirror and you don't see what's behind you. You point your eyes that way and you don't know what you're seeing. You don't have the bandwidth to comprehend what you are seeing, but slowly you are becoming a conscious driver. And that means going through a stage of realizing that there is something that you don't see, and you know, getting the senses to detect what it is that you're not seeing, and the curiosity to explore what it is that you're not seeing. And I guess that's the same in my current religious development. There are still some there's still a lot of things I'm not sure about, but the goal is to slowly become skilled and unconscious again, just like with driving. I don't think about everything I'm doing. I just know what to do, when to do it. I know what choices to make. I know that when I'm driving, I should look far ahead, not just close to my car, but also anticipate on what's going on. But that all happens semi-consciously, and that allows me to spend more bandwidth on other things, maybe enjoying something on the radio or talking with someone. And I know when to stop talking with someone and focus on the road ahead, because something is happening or something unexpected is happening, or I don't know, there's a detour. You know, it's kind of that same thing in religious development, and probably in any form of development, in any form of developing a skill. It's the same for me with learning a language. It's a very, oh man, I mean, I'm learning Japanese, right? And that's such an interesting process, just to see how that stuff works. Because at first, especially with Japanese, it's the most difficult language in the planet. That's why I chose it, to be honest. I was like, well, you know, if there are millions and millions of Japanese people who can speak it and read it and interpret it, then why not me? I mean, I've never been a guy of, putting my goals too low for myself, because that's just boring. I like long-term goals. And I like to have things that I can sometimes put away for a while and then come back to those things and pick it up again and continue. With learning a language, it's the same thing. At first, you hear words, you hear syllables, but don't know what's being said. But you study grammar and you study patterns, most notably, and suddenly there's one word in a sentence that you're able to distinguish from the rest of gibberish, and you know, that grows. And this is such an interesting process. So you know, if you're hearing this and you are maybe a little bit down, or you don't really know where to go in life, just know this: there is always a little bit of light somewhere, and you can expand on that just by focusing on that little bit of optimism. And just trust that if you focus on that, it will grow. If you focus on the negative, that will grow. So it's a part, you know, it's the choice that we make. Are we focusing on the positive, or are we focusing on things that don't help us, that we don't benefit from? Yeah. Well, that's nice, right? I needed to get that all off my chest. It is both a very pessimistic world we're living in, but it's also a very optimistic world we're living in. We can choose. It's both. And in the end, it's just, where do we want to go? Where do we want life to take us? And maybe it's a little bit of both. Sometimes we need the negative to gravitate towards the more positive. Sometimes we need positive, to see what is imperfect and what needs further work. And sometimes we are so discouraged by seeing what needs further work that, you know, it throws us a little bit off. That's fine too. Just, you know, take time. That's fine. And if not, you can always work, consume, and die.
We'll be right back. racionalidad tiene la esperanza de conseguir un mundo libre de caminar. Me niego a aceptar la identidad patriótica de esta globalización democrática. Tengo la esperanza de que todo va a cambiar. Amor, paz y solidaridad.
Timo Scalon with Sin Fronteras, and before that SOB Pariah Sound with Work, Consume and Die. Hey everyone, this is The Void Zero. This is my show. My name is Mark van Dijk. I am your host. I am broadcasting to you live from the Netherlands, the north. And have you also noticed people in the Netherlands have always trouble saying the Netherlands in English? Nederland. Nederland. We always say Nederland. Maybe I should just call it the Nether, like Minecraft. That would be nice. Or they should rename the Nether to the Netherlands in Minecraft. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. So let's see what is happening in the chat room, because of course you are, you know, a big influence in my show. OBS rocks. Darren O says, which version do you use, Streamlabs or just OBS? Yeah, this is just, no, this is not just OBS. This is a Streamlabs OBS version 0.16.3 with a nice background that George created. It's a combination of, let's see, here is Vegas and this is the Netherlands, Amsterdam to be exact. So that is OBS. Let's see. Progo says, my wife also left me for the weekend. I'm gonna do dude named Ben things. Well, you and me both, buddy. That is the perfect time, you know, to spend some time doing the tech stuff. And tomorrow I'm getting visitors, so that's fine. Monday, the family is coming back. So that's very nice. So Adam has expensive professional kit, but what about the cheap, broke, poor people who want to cast? Well, you know, all you need is just a microphone. You can get a Blue Yeti, connect that to your computer, and hey, you can broadcast. Use software like Mix with three X's to play music, and maybe get a cheap webcam like mine. I've got a Logitech C22, I think. Although in the software it says C20, so I'm a little bit confused. Did they sell me the wrong thing, or what's that about? I'm not really sure. Sir Bemrose has an inexpensive mic, Darren O says. Let's see. More interesting things in the chat room. Well, there's always interesting things in the Knowledge in the chat room. Just go to knowledgeinthestream.com. Join us. Of course, you can to talk with other people. You can. I usually use Discord, but Darren usually uses Zencastr, which is also a very nice application, especially because it's web-based, so you just need your browser and you can edit files, audio streams, because they are independently recorded, like, you know, that Rodecaster, which is a little bit more expensive, but that one gives you a soundboard. Anyway, there's a lot of things that you can do with a very low budget. And, you know, the more you like it, the more you'll spend on it. So be careful. If this is the hobby, you know, you want to chase, then just know it can become a little bit more expensive than you originally think. But if it's fun, then why not? You know, usually money's not the focus. It's just, you know, something that you need. That's true. And let's see. Do we have anything else here? I hope you like my... what was it, like 38 minutes of, I guess, internal insights shared with the world. And, I hope the video is, people appreciate the video as well. Just let me know what you think. Send me a message or something, and, I'd like to get some feedback. Gene Witch? Your electricity bill is $440 per what? Per month? Wow. That is a little bit on the high side, big guy. I wonder what you're doing. Do you have like a Bitcoin array or something? Like a mining farm? Yeah, then the price really goes up. Yeah, you can call it the lowlands. It's true, Radix. The lowlands. Sometimes I said that's true, Radix. I didn't say okay, Google. I mean, Google, man, just dissolve already into 1,000 pieces. Why not? Adam Curry, hey, seeing you in the chat room. That is nice. You had a detection somewhere that, attention, somebody is talking about you on the No Agenda chat room, on the No Agenda stream. Yes, yes. The thing you guys brought about the whole Epstein thing, that was so interesting. That yesterday I was working in my studio, getting my green screen set up correctly, and I drove back and I downloaded No Agenda first, put it on my phone, listened to it when I was driving back, and I actually took a detour. I was almost at home, and I decided, well, let's take a detour. So then I drove through the whole city of Groningen, and then you guys were still not done with that part, so I had to drive a little bit extra. But yeah, that was a lot of interesting information there that I really need to digest once again, because it was a little bit too much for just once. That's how great No Agenda is, I guess. It's just so packed with information that you have to revisit it. Grumpy Old Benz, yeah, you guys were streaming just before I came online, I think. That is also a show that people really need to check out. Just go to grumpyoldbenz.com. Check out what those old guys have to say about whatever, about tech, about, well, whatever grinds their gears. Just to check it out. And we've got more nice shows on the stream. I always really, really enjoy Nick the Rat. I mean, I can be in a bad mood, but that rat just always gets me back in the, in the high energy. And sometimes I fall asleep when listening to him, which I guess is just because of his soothing voice, or maybe it's Sindhu's soothing voice. That's also possible. Anyway, hey everyone, this is the No Agenda stream. I had another song for you in store, but if I don't open the correct thingy here, then you won't hear it.
In the morning, is she a doctor? Is she a doctor?
She full of shit.
Love to love you.
a second. What is Anthony Scaramucci doing? He says Trump isn't a racist. He's worse. He's so narcissistic, he doesn't see people as people. It's why he doesn't have any real friends. It's why he gives thumbs up next to an orphaned baby after a mass shooting. Everyone is an obstacle or a stepping stone. What a crybaby. What a bitch. The mooch. Have you heard that interview John did with him? John Dvorak? Where Scaramucci was basically up Trump's ass. I mean, I can say this now. What a turncoat. What a sellout. Anthony Scaramucci. He doesn't even deserve the name the Mooch. Not a Frodo. And I would love to love you. There ain't no other female above you. Before that, Jonathan Colton with Beds Hurt My Booty. Oh, of any band I play, this is the band with the best bass player, the Ten Goos, with Revolving Door on the No Agenda stream.
Big bang, clap, roar, cosmic circles from the shore, live sky, land, sea, competition, birds and bees, river run short to bend of bay, earth revolves another day, cities rise, grow, fall, nothing new, you know I've seen it all. It's like a big revolving door, takes you back where you were just were, to what it was like once before. Commodius ficus, Newton's apple, sudden squall, sky crash, Humpty Dumpty fall, Buddha, Thor, Prometheus, Amaterasu, Atman, Zeus, marzipan, matzah, dumplings, noodles, baked Alaska, sushi, strudel, hunters, gatherers, cities, states, theocracies, and shogunates and more. It's like that old revolving door, you end up where you were before, and then you go through it once more. Commodius Vickers. It's like that old revolving door. Ow, 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 ow. You know I've seen it all before. We're back to where we were once more. Commodius Vicus. We'll be right back.
controversial thing recently in the Netherlands, in the capital, Amsterdam to be exact, while we are listening to Zora on the background. The mayor of the city, her name is Femke Halsema, has a 15-year-old son, and that 15-year-old son has acted out, done some things that are far from legal. What did he do? Well, he had a forbidden weapon. That's how they frame it in the media. Could have been an alarm pistol, you know, the kinds that you have you carry when you are when you're going on a boat trip. He entered apparently an abandoned boat used for housing. Not sure how to call that in English, but you know, those are the boats that we have in the waters of Amsterdam and in other cities, and people live there. But this one apparently was abandoned. He emptied two fire extinguishers outside of the boat. He entered. He also had knives. And when the police came to the ruckus, he ran away, threw away the alarm pistol, which I'm not sure if it's actually forbidden or not. I mean, yeah, it's forbidden to use it as a weapon. It's an alarm pistol, but still, it is. I don't know. I guess the jury's out about that. But anyway, so this all happened. And the controversy is that, let's see, that the mayor has tried to not put attention on this and instead handle all of this internally. And now people say, well, she was abusing her power to keep this all under wraps. And, you know, I have some thoughts about that myself. So this is from the far left Green Party, former party member, the mayor. She's now mayor of Amsterdam. We don't have elected mayors. We have selected mayors. So it's always, you know, the old boys and girls network where people are selected based on past achievements usually. Anyway, normally I really don't like her, but in this case, I think that it is people at the more right side of the political spectrum who are really exaggerating about all of this. If I am a parent, you know, I guess the mistake that she made was she tried to keep it all under wraps instead of proactively coming out with this story, because she could have known that one way or another this would have become public. But she wrote, when this all did come out after it was exposed by one of the media organizations, she wrote a public letter explaining what happened, you know, her story, explaining that it was indeed her 15-year-old son who did these things, and how she tried to contact the appropriate organizations outside of her own influence network to, you know, deal with this in the right way, which means in the way that, you know, other people are also treated in similar situations. But now, of course, people who are her political opponents are all screaming murder and fire, as we say, because now she has tried to keep this all under wraps. You know, I am father of a 3-year-old. He's going to be 15 one day. What if he does this? Well, I can imagine that you get conflicted when, you know, your child does something that is against the law, especially if it's vandalizing other people's property and you know, just being destructive, demolishing things. You see a fire extinguisher, you don't think, you just You empty it because you never did that before and you're really curious how that is. And turns out it's so much fun, you do it again with another one. Kids who are 15 years old sometimes do these things. You know, they find a pistol, like an alarm pistol somewhere, and they carry it because it's just cool. You know, make selfies with it or something. You have some knives. You feel badass. And I think the people who are criticizing how Femke Halsema treated this, they're exaggerating. They're being a little bit too sensitive, and they are not really thinking about how a parent acts in these situations, because what she has said is there has been a very long and difficult talk with her son. She told the police to treat her son exactly like how they treat others, and it's the police who decided to keep his name out of, you know, publicity. But that's also what they do with other kids. So minors. So did she handle incorrectly? I mean, she could have known that this story came out, so she could have written that letter ahead of media organizations running with the story. But other than that, did she really do so much things wrong? I see people saying this is not just a 15-year-old guy acting out. This is worse. Well, I don't think so, guy. You should see what people of my school were doing when they were 15. They were dealing in drugs. They also had knives, brought them to school, were interested in weapons, air pressure weapons and stuff like that. Like, there's a word for that, but I don't know. So is this that uncommon? I don't think so. I think that the most uncommon thing is that normally this doesn't come to light as much. So maybe it's even a little bit unfair. And I'm saying this about somebody who I disagree with vehemently, politically at least. I think she makes bad choices. Amsterdam is turning into... Orwell could have designed that city how it is right now. If you go to Amsterdam, first of all, don't come by car because you cannot pay for the parking spaces. It's like 15 euros an hour or something. Secondly, if you walk through the parks, you see these signs that tell you if you litter, you will have to pay this amount of money if you are caught. If you, other things, you know, if you, don't have a valid parking ticket, this is the fine, and that is the fine. It is like a mini police state, I guess, and that's usually what happens when the left parties get into control. They feel that they have to control the public sphere, so they start, you know, telling you what not to do, and start to limit the freedom that people have at parties. Meanwhile, by the way, there was another political party, also in Amsterdam, of course, where else, where... they decided that as a form of protest against the current law, they were handing out what they said were ecstasy pills because they think ecstasy is the least dangerous of all the pills, and by keeping it illegal, it creates more problems than it will solve. So they were handing them out, but it turned out it was candy. But, you know, they had their 10 minutes of fame, I guess. Well, and this is just, is this really the way that, you know, is everything a protest? Is it needed to protest about anything? Is it really needed to, attack family members of politicians so harshly in public? Don't we have any form of self-constraint when it's about like 15-year-old children and stuff like that? I think I was shocked to see how people responded. So last Wednesday, my Dutch podcast with my co-host Sven Hazelhekke, podcast called Prism, we talked about that, and I expected to get some positive feedback about it, but not that much actually. No feedback at all. It was not really talked about at all on Twitter. Usually we get some feedback. We hear, well, hey, that was a really nice podcast. But I guess in this podcast, we were so contrarian towards, you know, what usually is our audience, that they might have not really enjoyed that part of the show that much. And I don't care. If they want to be this aggressive against 15-year-olds and against, you know, even though they are public figures, they still, you know, they, I mean, as soon as something happens to your child, you step out of usually step out of your official function and you become a parent. There are exceptions. For example, a couple of months ago, there was the case of a father and a son both going I think a club or something or a bar or anyway, they drank a lot of alcohol. Then they both got into their own car and they decided to do a street race. And a girl was just driving out of her parkway, the driveway outside of her house. And the son crashed like extremely hard against this car. And the girl, very unfortunately, she died. And as it turns out, father and son are, you know, they are part of the upper class, and they also have this upper class like air around them. Well, we didn't really drive too hard. We are now a victim of this coming into the media. They weren't able to reflect on their own behavior at all. Like, they were so self-absorbed that, I mean, I was perplexed. It was crazy to see how people are, you know, just unable to reflect on their own behavior and use anything as an excuse. That was what happened here. So there are also cases where, you know, parents and... but I guess in if you put it in a different light, this was also a father just grasping at every... argument, no matter how ridiculous, to try to get his son punished to the least possible extent. But I mean, this all backfired. The father was fired from his job. The son, he was a pilot. He was suspended from flying, and all because of their own behavior. But still, this was a story that was very interesting. From the angle that this was also a parent just, you know, trying to protect his child. Yeah, but this was a parent who said, well, we made a bad decision, and now we have to suffer the consequences, and we are sorry about what happened. No, these were the kinds of people who said, well, no, we are now also a victim because of media exposure and stuff like that, so we should be, our punishment should be reduced, etc., etc. Yeah, it is deplorable. And we talked about something else that is also just, you know, an awful situation, which there's not really a light in at the end of this tunnel, as I can see yet, is another very rich family who is very influential in the health care branch. They figured out a way to... basically play with the profits and pocket as much money as possible, like 12, 13, 14 million euros into their own pockets. Meanwhile, we see that, you know, healthcare is deteriorating at a rapid pace, which is just ridiculous if you know how great the Dutch healthcare system was and how it is right now. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to have medical insurance with... like a budget, and if you didn't use, like for example, 200 guilders it was back then you would get those 200 guilders back and you would pay your premium. But if you didn't use that minimum amount, then you would get it back. And then from 1 year, just 1 year, they decided to reverse this, and now it would become an own risk. So instead of getting those that amount of money back, you would have to pay at least this amount of money before healthcare starts paying for the rest. And then, you know, this all declined, and the people who are working in healthcare, their income isn't indexed. So that means that every year they get less and less spending power. And those things, man, those just... I mean, I'm so happy that I have a podcast, you know, so that I can talk about these things, make people aware about this. And I really hope that this will also create the possibility that people will eventually see how these systems operate. And instead of, you know, going to this big field of grass in, I think it's Amsterdam or The Hague, I don't even know exactly where it is, where people usually go to protest. Why don't we start protesting in front of the houses of those extremely rich people who have clearly stolen money by just, you know, fiddling with the numbers and percentages and whatever? Why don't we start protesting there? Why don't we protest in front of the tax agency building, you know? I mean, this is the Netherlands we are talking about. So that means people basically never protest for a couple of reasons. People are afraid of their job. People can never agree on enough things to, you know, form a protest. The media knows always how to spin this so that everyone who is partaking in the protest is basically painted as a douchebag. And there is too much political diversity. I mean, in the US, you have, you know, two main parties. Here, we have like 12 right now. We have Party for Animals. We have the Workers' Party. We have the Rich People's Party. We have the Anti-Islam Party. We've got the new guys who are trying to break the party cartel, as they call it. We've got the lefts. We've got the moderate lefts. We've got the socialists. We've got the Green Party. I mean, we've got the Christian Party number one. We've got the Christian Party number two. It's just, and we've got the party for people 50 years and older. I mean, it's ridiculous. No wonder that we cannot agree on anything. And where do we go from here? I mean, such a small country, you know, 17 million people, maybe 18 million. And so diverse. I mean, this is probably how you keep in position as the ruling party. So, yeah. It's it's very interesting to see how those things differ from the US. But the one thing that always irks me is how easily for political talking points people transplant the American discussion to the Netherlands. We see this, for example, with how people talk about white people. Dutch people don't use the same word white. I mean, we didn't use to, at least. We used the word blanc, which is from the French word blanc, which is, you know, like, I mean, it goes a little bit closer to, pale or maybe a colorless, and not like white, like the sheet of paper white. But now the people who are using that word that we have always used, blanc, are being called racist or identitarian. No, you should say white, wit. We've got white people and black people. And it in Dutch, it doesn't sound the same as in English. We have, we can say people of color, of course. That is the politically accepted term. But if you just talk about brown people, that's not okay. It's all copied, you know, straight from the US. And another thing that the European Union has copied from the US, which is also something that is just basically uncopyable because, you know, it's just different situations, is the call for reparations. Now, I mean, I will toot Adam Curry's horn again, this time because he's making a very, very enlightening podcast together with Mo Facts. The show is called Mo Facts with Adam Curry. They talk about the American descendants of slavery. And, you know, I mean, that is just part of the American culture. And in the American discourse right now, there's a talk about reparations. And those reparations, basically, it is a way for descendants of slavery to be compensated by especially the Democratic Party, because descendants of slavery have always been loyal to the Democratic Party, but they have always been treated unfairly. And, you know, I mean, just listen to the podcast, because Mo can explain it 1,000 times better than I can. And it's just, it's so enlightening. That thing he describes is, it's impossible to copy that to Europe. Why? Well, for one thing, Dutch people were never slave owners, not in this country at least. Yes, there was slave trade. Yes, there were these big VOC and WIC ships, you know. I mean, the ships themselves, let's be honest, they were beautiful. They were hard work and dedication. And I've been reading one of those ship's logs, and it's just, yeah, it's a very very interesting part of Dutch history. Interesting, and not saying that slavery was you know, rad and okay, and trading dealing in slaves was fantastic and all of that, but I mean, it's just a very different situation. For one, yes, the Dutch, some of the Dutch, I mean, you know, those who worked with those organizations partook in the buying and selling of slaves for goods and other things. We should not forget that there were also, you know, those in the, for example, the Horn of Africa, who sold slaves, who went out to hunt people they could capture and sell in, you know, to trade goods. And they wanted those goods. And you can see that by how the prices changed, how they drove up the prices and wanted more, 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 you know, in return for the slaves. Now, to copy the reparations story to this country is just like it's they use the American template and they copy it to this country without thinking about how this country has played a totally different role in all of that, and they want to compensate brown people. Just that. It's not about slavery anymore. It's about skin color. It's not about about actual well, victims of slavery. No, it's about white privilege and attacking white privilege. And that is just something that is, in my opinion, unfair. It is unfair to the American history. It's just blatantly disregarding the unique situation of the American continent. It is also very, very, it's very aggressive towards the native population of Europe. And also, Europe exists of many different countries. We weren't always in the European Union, and different countries acted in different ways, and they all want to centralize this under the European Union. Now, that just, there are so many things that they don't think about that still, you know, should be considered out of respect for those who suffered from slavery and slave trade. Also, out of respect for the people who had nothing to do with that, who just led their lives. Like, for example, my grandfather, you know, he worked in the mines. He had nothing to do with slavery. When every night when he came back, his face was black because he was working in the mine. By the time he was 60, he was wheezing when he was breathing, you know, very deeply. And I mean, that guy, he never complained, and he worked his ass off. He always served his country. He was also a policeman later in life. There's no respect for that anymore from the higher ups. It's just, if you're white, you have white privilege. And oh, thank God that where I live, it's not that bad yet. But if you look at Amsterdam, for example, then, oh my gosh, it is just, it's totally out of control. And I guess this is something we need to talk about more often. Anyway, 1 hour and 20 minutes. I think I've been orating for long enough for today. So let me close off with 25 Ways by Chris Rosh, and I'll sign off.
I was so sure, I was so certain. Now I know I saw the world through a small crack in the curtain. I woke up to you, the light drenched you in blue. Can't recall, was it the sun or the moon? And it's like dreaming in daylight. You, my
your thigh. They've got 25 ways to make your love life better. They've got 99 ways to make the bedroom steam. They've got 45 tips on how to be the life of the party. But we're home by 7:30. And I can't ignore the rush of blood, the flood of love from our embrace. Constellation, you shine bright and you've lit my fascination. Let me write your name in the sand, 'cause it's not about the upper hand, it's about hand in hand. And it's like dreaming in daylight. With you, my heart has taken flight. They've got 25 ways to make your love life better. They've got 99 ways to make the bedroom steam. They've got 45 tips on how to be the life of the party. But we're home by 7:30. Can't ignore the rush of blood, the flood of love from our embrace.
Pretty cool on noagendasocial.com. Apparently, we have a new member, a bot. It's the real Dvorak underscore bot. Hey, what's worse than finding a worm in your apple? Finding half a worm? No, the Holocaust. Yeah, that's John for you.
They've got 25 ways to make your love life better. They've got 99 ways to make the bedroom steam. They've got 45 tips on how to be the life of the party. But we're home by 7:30. And I can't ignore the rush of blood, the flood of love from our embrace. They've got 25 ways to make your love.
Anyway, this was it. The 33rd episode of The Void Zero. Thank you so much for listening. It's been an honor and a privilege to make this show for you. You can watch my shows at dlive.tv/voidzero. I thought that I was also broadcasting this to YouTube, but apparently I turned that off. So for next time, that's also where you can find me. But, you know, YouTube and channels and stuff like that are... I don't know, man. Ever since they started banning all of these people, I fell out of love with YouTube. Ah, so this was Chris Roach. This was my show. I guess this is where we end it all. And I will see you again next week. Hopefully. Or Sunday. I will be back Sunday for No Agenda pre-stream. So see you then.
Hello, everyone. This is the No Agenda stream. And I am Steven.